Hey, strangers. Today, I'm sharing with you an episode from one of my other podcasts, Dear Daisy. This was an especially good episode. A lot of issues were discussed and dug into. Every other week, I read listener letters live on the mic with a live audience via Zoom and answer questions or give advice with the live audience chiming in via the chat. It's a really special time. My listeners call it church. This show is very close to my heart. It's very, very different from Strange. And if you're someone who hates hearing my opinion, A, what are you doing here? And B, you will hate this show. Just be warned, apparently I curse a lot. Like, a lot. Even I was surprised listening back. I don't think I always curse this much on Dear Daisy, but also I may have been more aware of it listening back because I knew I wanted to share it on the main feed. I don't know. So, if you have kids in the room whose precious ears you want to protect, or cursing makes you clutch your pearls, you may want to skip this. If you're someone who is seeking some community, longing for connection, or wondering if you're the only one out there with your particular problem, this is the podcast for you. Normally, it's only available through Grab Bag Collab, along with my other podcast, Shut the F Up, Nick Lachey, a Love is Blind recap podcast with my co-host Ellen Marsh. You can listen to all this and more over at grabbagcollab.com. For just $8 a month or $80 for the whole year, you get everything GBC has to offer, including early and ad-free Strange, Dear Daisy, Shut the F Up, Amber Hunt's Crimes of the Centuries, The Catalyst, and Tales from the Resistance, as well as all of our quarterly shows. For $15 a month, you get all that, plus access to all our live recordings and hangouts. And for $50 a month, you get your name read in the credits of our show. Head to grabbagcollab.com to join today. You'll be supporting a woman and non-binary-owned small profit share business where all our creators get to keep ownership of their content. And now, enjoy Dear Daisy, and I'll be back with new episodes of Season 6 of Strange starting July 2nd, or June 30th, ad-free, if you're subscribed. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dear Daisy, a podcast about secrets. I am Daisy. We have a few new people in the live audience today. Welcome, Stephanie. So I just got back from Maine yesterday, where I was on a writing retreat, which was it was the third time I went to this particular retreat. Oh, God, I just love it so much. It's called The Salty Quill, and it's for women only. And it's on this really super remote island off of the coast of Maine. And it's a private, you know, it's an island that's owned by this family and they rent it out for like events or whatever. And this woman rents it out a few weeks a year for this retreat. And it's my third time there. It's the first time I've gone in the spring. I've usually gone at the end of September. And it's just so peaceful and magical, and like there's no pressure at all. There's no workshops. Like, you can sign up to share if you want, but you don't have to. You know, I slept for the first few days. There's a writer that I really love who talks about every time she goes on a retreat, she spends the first part sleeping, and it's just part of her process. And I wasn't sure what I was going to write. I had a couple of ideas in mind, and I ended up writing different things completely. But I brought this notebook that I had found in a desk in a vintage store in LA. There's this beautiful secretary desk, and I just happened to open a drawer and there was this diary in there. And I opened it up and it was like a day, you know, per day diary from 1945. The desk had, it was filled with these diaries and I could only afford one at the time. And I fucking kicked myself. I really wish I'd been able to buy the others. But what I ended up with was this one-year glimpse into this woman's life. It's not a very personal diary. It's very much like, today I went to the theater, you know, I mother washed my hair, I spent this much on a pair of stockings, and this is how much I have left. It's interesting to sort of watch her save the money as she goes, and then, you know, she starts with like $3, and then she's got like $94 at the end, and she refers to these spells. She said, I had a spell this morning. And she takes a pill, which I read is luminol, which didn't make any sense. So I Googled luminol pills. And it was like luminal or something. And anyway, it was for seizures. So I guess she had some sort of seizure condition. you know, and the war is happening. She's got two brothers off in the war, and they write letters, and she talks about, I received a letter from, you know, Roger today. Her younger sister has a sweetheart that's off at war, and there's a two-month period that's blank. And I was like, oh, I wonder what happened. And then at the end of the diary, there's all these like papers and envelopes and other stuff tucked in. And there were two pages of entries from that 2 months. And she talks about being in the hospital, and she talks about quarreling with the nurses. And then there's a tiny little slip of paper that's folded up, and it says at the top, wait. And it's somebody else's handwriting. And it's a sort of narration of taking her weight over this period of time. You know, on June 6th, we were unable to take your weight. 3 days later, we took your weight. It was this much. Sometime later, we took your weight. It was this much. And, you know, sometime later, it was this much. You came in with something, and it said, and suicidal thoughts, or you were suicidal. And it's the only clue into her mental life, because the, you know, the rest of the diary is just so mundane. And then I looked her, she wrote her, you know, she talks about getting her social security number, and I looked her up, and there's one thing about her online, and it's that, you know, it was her high school picture, and then she died in 1951 at 36. And I have no idea what she died of, how she died, nothing. And her gravestone just says daughter. You know, in this picture of her, she's quite chubby. And so I thought about trying to write a story about her, but I just haven't found the angle, and I'm not sure how, like, where to get in on it. And I don't know. It's just interesting to just peek into the sort of daily life of somebody who's long gone and who, you know, nobody remembers. I don't know how this desk came to be in Los Angeles. She lived in Chicago. You know, she didn't have any grandchildren, obviously. I suppose she may have had some nieces and nephews who she probably never even met. But somehow this desk ended up in Los Angeles with her diaries in it. And she was so insignificant in this world that whoever gave the desk, like, didn't even think to look in it or didn't think the diaries were important. But there's this woman who lived, who existed in this world, you know, and there she is on this paper, and she goes to see movies, and she works, you know, doing, I don't know, cleaning or something. While she's in the hospital, she's cleaning in the hospital. The only mention really about the war is the front page of the newspaper, you know, on V-Day, and just a little passage about V-Day, and we're, you know, still at war with the Japanese. And I don't know. It's just interesting. And you know, and I was up in Maine in this tiny little town, and there's just these people going about their lives, and there's been trillions of us, you know? I don't know. Who knows how she died, if she had a seizure and, you know, fell and hit her head, or if she ended up killing herself or what. And it's so interesting, the thought that she went into the hospital ostensibly for seizures, who knows? And the one piece of paper that she kept, like, you know, from the doctor, was about her weight. And this one little thing about, you know, suicidal thoughts, like, and there's not a, anyway, I don't know. I'm sort of fascinated by that. And if you ever find yourself in a vintage, you know, an antique shop, and you come across diaries, please, you know, grab them and send them to me, and I'll Venmo you back. Strangers, if there's one thing I've learned over the 3 years of doing Dear Daisy, it's that we should all be in therapy. I think therapy should be free for everyone, and therapists should get paid $1 million an hour. Of course, neither of those scenarios are realistic, but with Rula, you can get access to real mental health help for as little as a $0 copay. That's because Rula is in network with a huge number of insurance companies so that you can get the care you need without the added stress of the cost of therapy. Therapy should not be a luxury. It should be part of your regular healthcare maintenance. But finding therapists is hard, and finding one who actually takes your insurance, that's where most online therapy platforms fall short. Many don't work with insurance at all, which means you're stuck paying the full cost out of pocket or paying for an expensive monthly subscription. Rula partners with over 100 insurance plans, making the average copay just $15 per session. That's real therapy from licensed professionals at a price that actually makes sense. Rula is committed to supporting you and staying with you every step of the way on your mental health journey, from finding the right therapists to helping you schedule appointments and monitoring your progress. Rula is there. Plus, Rula provides medication management as well. Thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high-quality therapy that's actually covered by insurance. Visit rula.com/strange to get started. That's rula.com/strange. You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget. Anyway, I ended up not writing about her. My friends and I are writing a musical based on one of the episodes I did on Strange. And I ended up writing two scenes for that, which were very silly and fun and goofy and just a fun time. And then across the hollow behind our house, the old man who lived there, this old cantankerous man, had a stroke and his house has been condemned. And there's all these old cars back there. I think I've talked about this, and I'm sure that there are dead bodies in these cars because I spend too much time with true crime. And so I started thinking about like a murder mystery where this old man has dementia and his whole family's gone. And, you know, they find these bodies on his property and they have to figure out, like, who are they? Who put them there? And of course, he's the first suspect. So I started dabbling on that. And then we were supposed to leave on Saturday and then the weather was coming in. So we were all leaving on Friday instead. And I was going to surprise Kurt, you know, by showing up at the theater after his show on Friday night, on Saturday night, rather. But instead, I woke up the last day, I guess it was the last day, at 6 a.m. with a blinding pain in my head. Blinding. And I writhed around in the bed for maybe a half an hour before I texted the group that was there, the rest of the women. I said, is anybody awake? I really need some help. And somebody came in and, you know, took care of me. And after about an hour or so, they decided that I had to go to the hospital. You know, we're on this island that the only way on or off is with this one guy and his little boat. And he was off the island, you know, like an hour away. It was the longest two fucking hours of my life waiting for him. And then knowing that I was going to have to get on this boat, this choppy, you know, rocky boat in the sun. I was vomiting. It was awful. And most of the women there were older than me. So in some ways it was nice. I had this like team of moms, you know, coming and helping me. I was so embarrassed. And I ended up going to the ER and nothing is wrong. Nothing is wrong. They did the tests. They did the blood work. They did a CAT scan. The doctor was like, you're fine. I don't, you know, she's like, it's probably tension from, you know, going like this all day at my computer. And she did not say I need to drink more water. She did not say go for a walk, you know, but I was thinking like, dear God, if I die, like Kurt's going to sit on the couch for the rest of his life. And I don't want Monty to sit on the couch for the rest of their life. And, you know, I was like, their life is going to get derailed and they're going to, you know, they're going to have to spend years and years dealing with the fact that their mom died, you know, just all the things. And they're 13 and I was 13 when my mom died. I've already got the date in my head of like that would correlate to when my mom died for how old Monty will be, you know, if that makes any sense. And this morning, my parents are here because they came to see Kurt's show. And I don't know how it came up, but my dad said, you know, I'm sorry that I, you know, sort of backed out of life, you know, when mom was dying and then after she died. And I said, yeah, it wasn't great, but like, what can you do? Like, what can you do? We were all just trying to fucking survive. And I said, the good news is that you got sober before she died. And thank God, because it would have been a lot worse. But, you know, it's interesting because I was essentially worried that Kurt would do what my father did. And there was my dad, like, unprompted saying, I'm sorry, I checked out. And it's not, you know, he's apologized for that in the past. And again, it's just like, what can you do? You know, it's like the letter writer last time. Like, I don't know, I could go climb in that backpack from the past and rummage around in there. I mean, it's easier when they're alive and they can apologize, or you can say to their face, like, hey, that was shitty. It's much harder when they're dead and you can't confront them, but there's nothing to be done for it. We're all dealing with shit. So that's what happened to me. Nothing is wrong. I'm not dying. I got to deal with this tension in my head. And it was such a small thing. Like, it's not like I was actually dying, but it was enough of a wake-up call for me to be like, all right, you know, I want to be around and I want to be healthy and I want to, you know, I want to be around. So let's see. I'm so grateful also for this forum. You know, I thought about canceling today's recording because I just got home, but then I thought, no, you know, I think it, like, for me, it'll be nice to do this. I asked Kurt to go to my P.O. box, but I don't know that he did because I don't see a letter. But anyway, that's okay. All right. Strangers, this episode is brought to you by IQBar, our exclusive snack sponsor. IQBars are better for you, clean, plant protein bars packed with fiber and brain-boosting nutrients with zero added sugar. You no longer have to choose between healthy or delicious snacks. Recently, a protein bar company asked if I would partner with them, but when I looked at their ingredients, I found they used animal products like collagen, whey, and colostrum. I don't want animal products where I don't need them. That's one of the reasons why I love IQ Bar's plant-based protein bars. They have a wide variety of flavors from wild blueberry to salted caramel to coconut chip. They taste great, they're never grainy or gummy like other protein bars, and they hit the spot. Whether it's a quick breakfast on the go, a midday pick-me-up, or a post-workout snack, I like to carry a few IQ Bars with me wherever I go. IQ Bar's plant-based protein bars are packed with high-quality ingredients to help keep you physically and mentally fit. They're great for any diet, by choice or due to allergies. IQ Bars are free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMO, and artificial sweeteners. They have 9 delicious flavors. My favorite are the mint chocolate chip and the toasted coconut chip. With over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are starting their days on the right foot with IQ Bar's brain and body-boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. To get your 20% off, text STRANGE to 64,000. Text STRANGE to 64,000. That's STRANGE to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Dear Daisy, trigger warning, sexual assault. So I finally decided to take the plunge and write to you. I've had the shittiest couple of years, divorce after 26 years together, 18 married, selling the family home for less than we paid for it, oof, it's a long fucking story, turning 50 and finding a new home for me and my 18-year-old daughter and doggo. Anyway, all of that's behind me and we've been in our new flat for 6 months and she's doing her A-levels. We're in the UK, so this may not make much sense. So in theory, things should be settling down for me, but they're not. I'm having the biggest case of hating who I am. Been having some big arguments with my daughter and feel like I'm failing her all the time. I've had drama at work too. Mostly I think it's not my fault, but I'm starting to think that if you think everyone's an arse, maybe it's you who's an arse. I've been in therapy before, marriage counseling, and also lots of SA at my church when I was 13. Oh. I'm so angry and I don't know why. I have literal road rage over absolutely nothing and I'm ridiculous, but I can't seem to stop. Also think that I've never been in love and I'm 51. I feel like I've wasted my life, but I'm not sure how to start living it. I don't want to be alone, but I don't like men at all. I also feel completely invisible most of the time to everyone. I know this is classic perimenopause, and I am on HRT, but I just need to get myself out of this self-hatred. I'm going to go back to therapy, but any words of advice from you and the lovely people in the chat will be gratefully received. Love listening to you and everyone on GBC. Thanks for taking the time to read my long arse letter, Sue. Thank you, Sue. I mean, you know, the first thing I thought when you said rage was perimenopause. You've been through a lot, and I think you're allowed to be angry. I mean, we're all allowed to be angry. I'm really glad that you're going to therapy. I think that's step one. It's really, really important. I think we all feel like we're failing our children all the time, no matter what. I don't know a parent who's like, man, I'm fucking nailing it. I will also say that, like, going away for the week, I feel reset. And it reminds me of how important it is to have that space. There was somebody else on the retreat who said, you know, that around Christmas time, her husband is like, you need to go back to Salty Quill. Like, you know, your shoulders are up at your ears. So I think it is important to have some place to sort of reset once in a while. You know, we haven't taken a vacation since 2020, and that was fraught and not very pleasant. I mean, it was fine. It was okay. But sometimes I think of vacation as like frivolous and something that only the wealthy can do. But it is really important. And I know that most of us can't afford it. I can't afford it. You know, I put it on my credit card. I don't know. She was like, wow, you paid me so quick. I was like, well, the bank's not going to be paid so quick when they come asking for it. And it's hard right now because everything is really expensive. But it is important to find time and space to reset. Sometimes I'll hear myself, and this was on the drive back, you know, I was like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, to somebody in a car, go, go, whatever it was. And then I was like, okay. And I say out loud, okay, Daisy, you don't have to do that. You know, it's okay. It's okay. I was thinking about that on the drive down, about writing a book that's just called It's Okay. The retreat leader, you know, she was sort of on the phone with Kurt as this whole thing was taking place. And, you know, Kurt was like, okay, I'll come up. And it's, you know, it's an over 4 hour drive, and he had a show to do, and I didn't want him to come up, but, you know, she thought he was coming. I guess he wasn't clear about whether or not he was coming. I don't know. However it happened, she took my suitcase and my car keys and put my suitcase in the car with the car keys and locked the car for safety, you know, but then I didn't have my car keys, and it was this whole hullabaloo about how was I going to get down to my car? You know, I couldn't drive, all the things. And she kept a pause. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I was like, it's okay. It's okay. You made the decision that was the only decision in that moment. It's totally okay. I mean, that's a small example, but just, you know, I stopped at this place along the way that has lobsters and has these really good lobster rolls. And I thought, oh, I'll bring, you know, my parents are here. I'll bring some lobster dinners home. But the place only took cash. And so I found a place further down, and I was like, oh, these are even less, you know, there's $5 cheaper. And then I realized after I paid for them that that's because they were alive and we had to kill them. And I've got these lobsters in my car, and I texted Jordan because Jordan loves lobster. And I said, I bought these lobsters, and now I realize, like, we have to murder them. You know, poor Kurt. Like, I just wanted to bring him a nice lobster dinner, and now I've made him a serial murderer. And, you know, and Jordan was like, it's okay, it's okay, they're the cockroaches of the sea. And I was like, ew, well, now I really don't want to eat them. And she's like, fuck off, just like, have, it's okay, like, eat the lobster. And I took a picture of Monty holding this lobster, you know, alive, and this lobster was feisty, man. He tried to smack Monty in the face with its tail. And Jordan was like, see how happy your kid is, like, just eat the fucking lobster. And that's another instance of me just like looking for the problem and looking for the issue, and you know, just eat the banana, just have the coffee, go to Starbucks, you know, like I have to order my medicine through Amazon because it's cheaper and I feel awful about it, but it's okay. It's okay. And this is just to say, like, the little shit, the people getting in your way on the road, it's okay. And I think we have to retrain ourselves sometimes to just take a deep breath and be like, this thing is not a thing I have to be upset about. This person cutting me off on the road, it's their fucking issue. Maybe somebody's dying in their backseat. It's their issue. And getting your butthole all tensed about it and yelling, you know, you fucking arse, is not going to do anybody any good. You know, we think like, oh, it's good to just like express the rage. Sure. But also you could just be like, okay, you needed to get ahead of me in that moment. You needed to drive that fast. You need to be looking at your phone when the light turns green. Like, it's okay. We're all going to get there. And show me a mother and daughter who haven't fought, and I'll show you their avatars, their AI. They don't exist. You know, I didn't get the luxury of fighting with my mom, really. Not, you know, not over any real significant thing. And that's not to say, like, you're lucky, you, me. I just mean, like, it's supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be like that. And you, I'm sure, have unresolved trauma from when you were your daughter's age. I mean, obviously you do. And I think there are resentments that we put on our children, expectations that we put on our children that we don't recognize. There was a couple years ago, Monty gave me some sass over something, and I thought to myself, oh my God, I wouldn't be able to have a daughter. Like, my own unresolved trauma, I think, would make me a bad mother to a daughter. You know, my own shit of being bullied when I was little, or feeling left out, or not being pretty enough, or not being having the nice clothes or whatever would all come up. And I'm sure there would be this internal Greek fucking tragedy of me fighting with my daughter because it's bringing all my own shit up. And I'd like to think that I'd be therapized enough to recognize it, but who knows? But this is an opportunity that's showing you things that you need to work on. You are failing your daughter, and also you're not failing your daughter. There's no way to not. There is no way to not. You know, I was thinking about times where Monty has really been dramatic over something that's not a big deal, and I've just sort of been like, really, bro? And then I think, oh, I've really failed Monty. Instead of saying really, bro, you know, not that I say really bro to their face, but you know, I should be hugging them and letting them be sensitive about it. And then I think, you know, but those are the kids that like can't leave the house or like cannot tolerate any pain because they've been used to somebody, you know, rushing to aid them and comfort them when they need to learn to comfort themselves. But it feels like you're failing them. And maybe you are, you know, we're failing our children all the time, but there's no way to parent without failing your children. There's no way to do it. And they're going to feel let down. It's all part of it. And in terms of hating who you are, I love you and I don't even know you. And I think it's okay. It's okay to hate who you are. As long as you recognize that you're hating who you are and you're, you know, recognizing that it's something that you want to work on. And I think hating ourselves is just our version of seeing flaws. And that gives us an opportunity to grow and change and work on the things that we want to be better or different. You know, recognizing things about ourselves that we don't like and that we want to fix. When you hear yourself say, I hate myself, just like with the road rage, just stop, you know, and imagine your daughter saying this, I hate myself. What would you say to her? You know, imagine you are your own mother, not your mother, but you as your mother. And say, I hate myself, and imagine what you as your mother would say. You know, whatever flaws you think you have or character defects that you think you have, we all have them. And again, there are opportunities to look and see where change needs to be made. And also, I think you're right. Like, if you start thinking that everybody around you is an asshole, you know, maybe it's a good idea to stop and look, you know, just take a breath and look a little closer. It's possible that you work in a toxic place where, you know, everybody walks in there and they're all fucking assholes. You know, you haven't wasted your life. You've lived your life and you've survived till now. And that's laudable and commendable. And whatever you've done up until this point is preparation for what you're going to do next or what you are in the process of doing. And it's all necessary for that. You know, someday this pain will be useful. And that's not to say that you can't feel the pain or be angry or be resentful or be hurt. It just means that you can take all of that and transform it into the next thing. This is so fucking cliched, but I think it's cliched, because it's true. You know, as the caterpillar is getting into the cocoon, they're not thinking, oh, I just wasted my fucking life. They're just preparing for the next stage. And they have no idea what that next stage is going to be. You know, you have no idea what your next stage is going to be. Strangers, this episode of Strange and Unexplained with Daisy Egan is brought to you by Alloy Health. Let's be honest, aging can come with some unwelcome changes. Sleep disruptions, hot flashes, brain fog, weight gain, and decreased libido can hit us hard. Menopause is inevitable, but it's also treatable. Most of us don't know where to go for a solution. That's where Alloy comes in. Alloy is a digital health platform that connects you with a menopause specialized doctor to help you feel and look your best in midlife. Your doctor will help you find the best, safe, science-backed treatments for your symptoms, skin, hair, weight, and sexual wellness delivered to your door. Everything is done online from the comfort of your home, no waiting for an appointment or in line at the pharmacy. Alloy is fast, accessible, and their treatments actually work. Recently, I got new pictures done, and I realized I was looking a little old under the eyes. That's why I'm using Alloy's under eye cream. It is a miracle. Alloy solutions are available by prescription, so you'll need to complete an intake form online. Receive a treatment plan from your doctor, who will create a personalized treatment plan tailored to your specific needs. Plus, you'll have unlimited access to your doctor so you can message them anytime. You'll get a 3-month supply once approved, and it'll ship directly to your door with automatic refills. Join the 95% of women who tried Alloy and saw relief in the first 2 weeks. Head to myalloy.com and use the code STRANGE and tell them all about your symptoms, and you'll get a fully customized treatment plan and unlimited messaging with your doctor. Plus, you'll get $20 off your first order today. Head to myalloy.com and use code STRANGE to get $20 off your first order. You have an adult daughter who's about to go off and live her life, and you have an opportunity to just start new and fresh. Here's the thing about the trauma that happened to you, you know, at church when you were younger. It happened, and there's no amount of digging or scratching at it or looking at it that's going to change it. It happened. And I think the question is, and now what? Nothing's going to undo it. I was listening to an episode of This American Life about a woman who, when she was young, I can't remember, five or eight or something, her parents went through a custody battle. And part of that custody battle was her having to testify that her mother had touched her inappropriately. And the therapist at the time had made tapes. And at 17, she asked to watch the tapes, and she did. And she didn't have these memories of the thing that her younger self was talking about until she watched these tapes. And in the tapes, you know, she's talking about her mother touching her inappropriately. And she said that when she saw the tapes as a 17-year-old, she suddenly remembered all this stuff happening. And she became a case study. And then this other therapist looked at the case study, and she thought it was a classic case of false memory, false repressed memory. And it upheaved this woman's whole life and her whole view of what had happened. You know, she couldn't remember this stuff happening. And then suddenly she remembered it all happening. And this other woman's argument was, I mean, she had a lot of arguments about the way in which the memories presented themselves and the language that this very young person used, you know, and it sounded coached. And the woman said, you know, at this point now, the water is so muddy that I have no way of knowing what happened and what didn't happen, if it happened, if it didn't happen. If it didn't happen, then does that mean that my father, who subsequently died, like, coached me? Did I ruin this woman's life? Did this thing actually happen? And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it happened or not, because here we are now in this moment. And yes, it would be great to know definitively, just to know, and to also, you know, just know what happened to your body. But there's no way to know anymore. And I'm not saying that you are having false memories. Please understand, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, like, what happened, happened. And it can't be undone. It can't be rewritten. It happened. And it's a thing that happened to you, and it's awful. And it shouldn't have happened, but it did happen. And you're going to take that part of yourself, and you're going to give her a hug, and you're going to fold her up, and you're going to put her in your purse. And she's just going to be a part of the you that makes you you, you know? And I'm glad you're on HRT. You know, I really do hope that helps. And I hope that you can go to therapy and be mad. Be mad about it. You can be mad about it and also understand that, like, there's nothing to be done for it. You can be mad at the situation in the past. You can be mad that you're still mad about it, that it happened, that it's unfair. That's okay. But you don't want to walk around the rest of your life being mad about it, because it will just fester, you know? You can keep scratching at the scab and let it be open for the rest of your life and maybe get infected and keep fucking scratching at it. Or you can let it be and let it have a scar, let it scar over and heal. And then you can look and say, this is a scar from this thing that happened. This is a thing that happened to me. And here's the reminder of it that I will never be able to get rid of. And it's okay, you know? And you can put lotions on it that will help the scar fade, but it will always be there. And even if you make it fade all the way, you know that it's there. It will never go away. And it's okay. And now you get a chance to live your life the way you want to live it and figure out who you are. I think a lot of us, I mean, that's what my 84-year-old dad was just sitting here saying. Who am I? Who am I? Who am I to myself? Who am I in the world? I think we get to keep reinventing and keep honing and be a person who hated chocolate ice cream your whole life. And you get to suddenly be like, actually, you know what? I like it. It's okay. I don't know if any of that resonated or made any sense. Let's see. Let's see what the chat. Ooh, 92. Oh my God. Okay. Let's see. Sorry. I'm just getting caught up on this. We have Molly has a three-legged cat, tripod kitty, the most expensive free cat. Oh, that's nice. Melissa says, what you said about the woman in the diary being insignificant and thrown away is so scary. But she wasn't, because you found her diary and you read it and now you're telling us. Yes, let's all go find dead people's diaries. Molly works at Restore and sometimes finds old writing, but they're boring. I love Restore. Ugh. I also love finding old photographs and photo albums and stuff. Okay. Barry says about my headaches, oh, it's almost like a physical manifestation of your brain bringing up the correlation between Monty's age and what you experienced at that age. Yeah. Stephanie said she didn't tell you to lose weight. It's a Christmas miracle. I gotta say, man, any doctor outside of LA, there's not been a single one who has said a fucking word about my weight here. Not a fucking word. Okay. Molly says her anxiety spikes the most when she's driving too. That's a good way to look at it, is anxiety. Chris says therapy will be important, and truly being honest with yourself and giving yourself space for your feelings will go a long way to figuring out what you want for your life. Yep. Melissa says, amen. I told my kid that this the first time. Being a parent, I know I will make mistakes. My kid responded that it was their first time being a kid. Yeah. It helps that my child is 18 and grown up a lot in the first year of college. Ash says, speak for yourself. I'm fucking nailing it. This is a joke. I have hella anxiety about parenting and how I'm failing. Chris says, we are awesome over here. We have a plaque and everything for foster parents of the year. Ash says, I would have stopped. I've only eaten a lobster roll for myself and not told my family. Oh, yes, I would have done that. I should have done that. I should have just had a lobster roll and called it a day. No, it was nice. Ashton says you can't pour from an empty cup. Eventually, you need to rest or else your body will make you rest. Yes, it's really true. Yeah, as much as we joke about, like, have you rested? Like, it is actually really, really important. Christy says, this is something I struggle with so much. I'm working on it in therapy. I'm good about making sure others in our family are taken care of, but I don't do that for myself. Then in January, my body fell apart. Yeah. And became a bigger mess than it was already. I mean, that's also a really great point, right? Like with your car, like if you ignore the maintenance sign, if you take it in when the maintenance sign comes on and get it fixed, right? It'll be $300 fix, right? But if you let it go, then it's going to affect the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And then the car is broken down and you can't fucking drive it anymore. So you do really have to do your maintenance on yourself and take your breaks and reset. Apparently, Ashley says, as Nirvana said, it's okay to eat fish because they don't have any feelings. And then Joanna says, not to compare Kurt Cobain to David Foster Wallace, ew. But David Foster Wallace did write a smashing essay called Consider the Lobster, which is kind of about all about their feelings. Ruined seafood for me forever. Yeah, I still eat fish, but now I feel guilty. Yeah, I won't read that. Courtney says, I have to remind myself they can't hear me anyway. Oh, the people in the other cars. Yeah, yeah. I want to make an electronic sign where I can type out how dumb I think they are so they can, quote unquote, hear me. Yeah, that's fun until you get shot in the head for it. You know what I mean? Listen, I want to take a little pause right here to say, I want to talk about rage and outward expressions of rage and telling people what we think about them and et cetera, because I was also thinking about this a lot over the break. And there's somebody in this live right now, and he knows who he is, who has continued to comment on people's posts with shade. Oh, actually, he's not here anymore. I don't know where he went. You know, we'll take the rage bait and bite. I was thinking about, I saw a piece about how Billie Eilish, I don't know, spent some millions of dollars to provide vegan meals for homeless, unsheltered, unhomed people, whatever, people living on the streets. And the headline or subheadline said that she had come under fire for saying people who love, you can't love animals and eat them. And I thought, come under fire? For what? She's not a policymaker. She's not a lawmaker. She wasn't saying people who say they love animals should legally not be allowed to eat them. She was just saying a thing, an opinion. Why is she coming under fire? It's so bizarre to me. It's such a harmless thing to say. Unless I'm missing something, it's such a harmless thing to say. People who love animals shouldn't eat them. I disagree because I'm an asshole who can't stop eating meat. I disagree with her. Great. Who cares? Let her have her opinion. I saw this post. Some fucking man wrote, like, women under some age shouldn't be wearing kitten heels at events or outs or whatever. And all this rage bait. And I'm like, all you just did was boost his profile. That's all you did. You know, somebody posted a picture of a frog and was like, if this post gets more likes than the original post, it means the original post sucked. And, you know, it did. And that was funny. But why do we, what are you doing? When you go in a comment and say, fuck you. I hate this. You're stupid. I disagree. What are you doing? Nobody cares. That person's not going to see your comment and be like, oh, you know what? That commenter's right. That's not going to happen. You know, I saw a post a doctor made about a thing that happened when she was in residency, you know, that was a lesson in racism. And she was sharing the story to talk about racism in the medical field. You know, and there were comments from Black people that were sort of like, here's what you missed. And the original poster was like, oh, that's a great point, you know, valid point. That's one thing, to be like, here's what you missed in this, right? Because that's a conversation. But to be like, fuck you, lady. Like, somebody left a comment on Strange and Unexplained that was like, why does she have to give her opinion on everything? You know, why does she have to go on about how she doesn't like music from the 1970 or from 1977? I know it's her podcast and she's allowed to give her opinion, but I don't like it. Okay, so don't listen. Like, that was the stupidest comment I've ever read in my life. Stupider than the guy who said I was a cunt and needed to be backhanded. Because I'm like, it's my opinion. It's my fucking show. It's okay that you disagree with me. It's an insignificant comment. I'm writing about a cryptid on the side of the road in Dover, Massachusetts in 1977 that five people saw. If all I did was report the story, the episode would have been 15 minutes long, but you come to my show because it's my perspective. It's the way I tell the story. So if you don't like it, don't listen to it. But commenting, you know what? Thank you so much for commenting, because all you've done is boosted my profile. You may have made my star rating go down a little bit, but every comment that I get gives validity to the show. Every time you comment on somebody's bullshit that you don't like, all you're doing is boosting their content and boosting their page and validating their point of view. That's all you're doing. Stop doing it. If we all stopped engaging, this shit would go the fuck away. If we all stopped using AI, the shit would go away. And I know that it helps you get through your day faster, get through your work faster. But here's the thing. And I'm not faulting anybody. I am not faulting the user. I really am not. I know that it is becoming more and more impossible. And I don't fault you for trying to make your life easier. But what ends up happening is that now everybody has to use it. And now we all have more fucking work to do. That's all that's happening. The time that you save is not going to be taken. I mean, maybe it will be taken up by leisure time. And I hope that's the case. But my worry is that everybody will then have to do more work because, well, look, you've just cut out an hour of time. Great. Now I have an hour more time to do work. People get assistance so that the assistant can do the grunt work and you can do more work. Stop engaging in the toxic shit and it will go away. One of the biggest reasons that Trump is president is because people fucking paid attention to him. The media went, ha ha ha, or oh my God, or clutched their pearls. Look at what this man said. And now where are we? If people had just sort of quietly rolled their eyes and let it pass and didn't give it fuel, we would have had a lesser war criminal in office and things would be marginally better. You know, if people hadn't been like, wow, George W. Bush is so folksy, ha ha ha, he'll never be president. Okay, thank you for letting me go on my rant. Chris says, when people drive poorly around me, I usually just say to myself, I'm glad I don't have the problem they have right now and relax back into my seat. It took me a long time to get there, though. Yes, it takes training. It's a habit. It is a habit that you have to work on. Ash Lalala says, having a vagina makes parenting daughters rough, and I'm a whole ass therapist. Ashton says, Ash Lalala, what does therapizing asses have to do with parenting daughters as a vagina haver? Very good comeback. And she says, I'm pretty therapized and a therapist, and just having a vagina in common with a vagina having daughters makes it rough because your brain looks for commonalities and compares and contrasts. Joanna's completely smitten with the phrase vagina haver. It's a phrase she's been looking for her whole life. Okay. Melissa says, did she really remember, or was it a memory of a memory regarding this article and this thing on This American Life? Yeah, it's hard. And who knows? Who knows? And if it helps you to think that that memory is absolutely correct, then okay. And if it helps you to think maybe that memory's not correct, then okay. It's okay. Courtney says, this reminds me of what I was saying about my situation last time I was here for church, about me just having to accept it's a thing that happened, that it doesn't make it suck any less. It's something you heal and grow from. Yeah. Yeah. Courtney says, not to center myself at all, just reminds me of my own thought process. That's okay. We're allowed to do that. Yeah. Ashlo says, you're good. Most of our job in the chat is to center ourselves. Yeah. I mean, we're all here to be like, your experience is not unique, and we've all had I've had this experience too. Ashlo says, all of you will be glad to know that I recommend that parent clients do things and handle things a certain way, but 50% of the time or more, I don't parent the way I recommend. Yeah. I often catch myself doing the wrong thing and having to laugh about how hard it is to parent right. Yeah, I mean, you got to remember that all of us are fucking up constantly. Ashton says, I know dogs aren't the same as children, but TBH, having Ruthie is what solidified my not wanting to have kids, because I learned that I don't have the patience to parent the way I want to. Yeah. I wouldn't want to be a parent who yells when they're overwhelmed and overstimulated, and I don't trust that it would happen. Hard same. I mean, I am a parent and I do those things. Ashlala says, Ashton, I'm so glad you learned that before having children instead of after. I'm very often overstimulated. Yeah, I found myself last night, you know, on my way home, I was like, I feel reset and I'm going to just sort of, you know, Monty's going to be a teenager and I'm going to just sort of let them be a teenager. And I found myself getting very upset, you know, pretty quickly, and having to remind myself, like, this is okay. This is how they're supposed to be. This is the tone they're supposed to take with you. You know, this is all just part of their growing process, and they're using this tone with you because they want to establish their independence and they want to establish whatever. It's okay. This is all part of the process. It actually has nothing to do with me. And I can also say to them, I don't speak to me in that tone. This is going to be the only letter today because there's a lot of comments and we're all digging in really hard. Erica says, my mom and I hardly communicated in my teens from my teen angst and hurt feelings. It wasn't until my mid-20s, after some time of living completely on my own and losing my maternal grandmother, who was a second mom to me, for me to really appreciate everything my mom did for me. We slowly began making changes in our relationship, and she became my best friend. I could not imagine not talking to her a bajillion times a day. And we now live together after many years of being on our own. And it's so fun, and I wouldn't change a thing because it all needed to happen to get there. And Chris says, and now she is mom to all of us. Yeah. Christy says, okay, this has me crying. I love you and Mama Lupe so much. I know the struggles we've been through with Em. There were times last year when I thought we lost our kid and it felt hopeless. The kid is doing so amazing now. We all had a lot of therapy and we were so close. And we are working on rebuilding trust. And she talks to me about everything, asks for help and advice about things. It's been a hard journey, but I love that kid so much. And I'm thankful for healing that's taking place. Yeah, I mean, you know, my own relationship with my stepmother, I think in some ways mirrors, you know, like a bio mom relationship. You know, we were close in the beginning, as I would have been as a baby, right? And then we really struggled for a while in a big, big, big way that seemed irreversible. It really did seem irreversible. And I've just had to make the choice to move past it and, you know, and come back around. And I think, you know, in some ways, it, like I said, it mirrors sort of a bio relationship in the cycles of it, you know. I had to make a conscious choice to let it go and work on it and come back to it. For whatever reasons, I decided to do that, you know. Erica says, I love hearing this, Christy. I know Em was having a hard time, but to hear that she is thriving is amazing. You and Chris are such amazing parents, and she's lucky to have you both. And they all have a lot of aunties and uncles. That's true. Wendy says, I had a doctor that was, quote, so good, she told me to lose weight and yelled at me on her way out the door to quit smoking. I hadn't smoked in years at that point. Ugh, thanks for listening, lady. Boy. Melissa says, regarding road rage, I live in Texas, and no lie, a guy shot another guy on the freeway a few years ago, and the guy who was shot chased the other car down while bleeding in his own car with his own gun to try to shoot him. Yeah, yeah, you don't know who you're dealing with, and so don't, nope. And then I feel like you just need to carry that over to the internet and just be like, I don't know who I'm dealing with. And also, would I say this in person to this person? Probably not. Joanna says, because Billie Eilish, because she also has a platform, I think, so she just alienated everyone who can't achieve that level of, I guess so, but like, you don't have to be alienated. Like, that's her bullshit. You know what I mean? Great. Good for you. I'm so glad that you are able to not eat meat. You probably have a private fucking chef who makes you incredible vegan meals and you don't have to think about it. And that's great for you. But that's just your opinion. I don't have to feel alienated by that. I can just be like, cool, man. I mean, I don't care about her music one way or the other. So Wendy says, I don't eat meat, but I feed it to my husband, to each their own. Ashlula says, I'm an asshole who doesn't want to stop eating meat, and somehow I don't feel guilty at all. Melissa says, I can't give up meat, even though I knew it would help the planet. Yeah. So I do my shopping by thrifting. Denim takes so much water to make. I feel like, so listen. That's a really great point, Melissa. And that's something that I really want us to all remember, because I do this too. I'm like, I have to do everything right. I have to, you know, I mean, I don't, but I feel guilty because I don't do everything right. I feel guilty because sometimes I eat bacon. I feel guilty because sometimes I eat meat, whatever it is. And I have to remember that like 90% of my wardrobe comes from thrifting. Last night we ate salad that came from my garden. The lettuce came from my garden. Like I am doing the things. I haven't shopped in Target in I don't know how. Like, you can do the things that you can do and be okay about it. And don't fucking, feel shitty about everything. All right. Courtney says, I don't think women should wear kitten heels, period, but that's because I think they're ugly. But I'm not going to tell them that because it's not my business. Exactly. And also, like, who the fuck are you, dude? You wear some fucking 4-inch heels and then tell women what they should and shouldn't wear. Fuck off. And also, it just feels really good to be in a place in my life where I do not care what a man thinks about how I look. I do not fucking. Good for you. Good for you, sir. Courtney says, I don't get it either. Really, I just don't understand the benefit of being a 1/4 inch higher off the ground. Yeah, I mean, they're not cute, but who cares? Ashton says, as a society, we have lost impulse control and distress tolerance. Yes, Americans collectively believe we have the right to exist without ever feeling uncomfortable. It happens on all sides. 100%. Chris says, we have lost the ability to move on and go about our lives. The world would be a lot better if we could get back to that place. Melissa says, we also think we have to share every thought in our head. Every thought is 100% right and valid. Sometimes the thoughts need to stay inside. Thank you. Say it louder for the people in the back. Sometimes the thoughts need to stay inside. Melissa says, regarding AI, I have to tell you all, they are starting to process of making AI prohibitively expensive. Great. It's what we knew would happen. They reeled companies in by giving it away almost, and now they are charging for it. My husband's company's AI cost just exploded, and now the AI they use is more expensive than the people they laid off. Boo-hoo, so sorry for you. You know? Great, good. They're fucking digging their own fucking holes. Courtney says, okay, but hear me out. If we don't, then how do we call people out without boosting their stuff? Not AI bots, but real people. Yeah, Joanna says, the difference is between keyboard warriors and real life activism. Courtney, they're not going to care what you say. You're not calling them out. You're just going, la, 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 into the cacophony of la, 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 la. You call them out by stopping. That's it. That's how you call them out. I'm calling out Target by not shopping there. You know, Jeff Bezos is now starting to whistle a different tune about how people shouldn't have to pay taxes if they make less than $125,000 a year. That didn't happen out of the goodness of his heart. And you know what? It didn't even happen from people yelling at him. It happened from people stopping shopping at Amazon. That's how that happens. He doesn't give a shit. You could yell at him to your face till your face turns purple. He doesn't fucking care. What you do is you yell at the other people and you say, let's all do this together. You don't yell at them. You say, hey, let's go. Let's all do this together. And then his fucking numbers start to go down and he goes, wait a minute, what happened? And he goes to his team and he says, what's happening? What's happening? And they say, well, people don't like you because of these reasons. And he goes, ooh, I need to do a PR thing. What's the best thing I can do to get the plebs back in line? Well, why don't you say that they shouldn't have to pay taxes? That's it. When What's-His-Face from Sword and Scale said that horrible thing about a rape gone wrong, I just stopped listening. And, you know, maybe you can put a post on your own thing that says, like, here's why I'm not doing this thing. Here's why I disagree with this stance. Here's why I don't shop at Amazon. Yeah, Melissa says, if people stopped listening to Trump, he would wither and die. He needs attention. He's like Tinkerbell. Yeah. Joanna says, Trump as Tinkerbell. I love this. We should make little, you know, Tinkerbell with Trump's head on it. Wendy says, I admire people who can have their moms live with them. I could not. There would be a homicide. I mean, same here. Ash Lalala says, it's okay to feel annoyed and angry. You don't have to stop feeling that. Just don't let it control your brain and try to release it after it's done. Correct. Yeah. Chris says, annoyed and angry is just a feeling and a new feeling will come soon. And again, I talked about this before, like even things that feel huge, in a few months, they're going to go away. You know, the thing with the summer camp last year, like I barely, you know, it's barely a ding in my head. Episode title, sometimes the thoughts need to stay inside, but the subtitle needs to be validifying. Yeah, man, I hope any of that was helpful. I hope that was helpful in general. You know, when I come off of these weeks, I think like I'm going to eat right and I'm going to get up at 6 a.m. and I'm going to meditate every morning and I'm going to just drink tea and I'm going to eat, you know, spinach and make salads with spinach and strawberries and goat cheese. Like, you know, in the hotel room, I ate mac and cheese from a microwavable thing. Like, I mean, I was a little stuck, but still. The best laid plans. And the key is really to just do one thing, small things. I will also say I bought this device that locks my apps and I highly fucking recommend it. I highly recommend it. There's multiple kinds. I got the one that's just called Locked or something. I cannot tell you. You know, I locked my phone over the week and I meant to leave the thing in the car. Thank God I didn't because I would have ended up fucked. But I just left it in my suitcase and I left it there and I didn't touch it the whole week. I was locked out of all my games, podcasts, everything. And it was great. I could get anything I needed on my laptop, but I didn't sit there with time wasting fucking bullshit. And I think what I'm going to do is lock my phone in general and give the fucking thing to Kurt and. You know, you have got to get this device. I'm telling you, just invest in it. It's not that much. It's like 60 something, whatever it is. Get it. Just lock the games that suck your brain away and lock fucking Instagram and TikTok and that shit. Just lock it. If you really want to look at it, you'll unlock it. It's not hard. You just tap your fucking phone on it. But like put it somewhere where you have to go get it. I spend so much time, and I think part of the reason I watch so much garbage TV is because I use it as an excuse to play the stupid game on my phone. And I bet you, if I don't have access to the game on my phone, I won't be like sitting around watching TV. And this is not to say that you shouldn't sit around and watch TV sometimes. You absolutely should. You need to fucking stop and zone out and disassociate and have your games and have your TV and do whatever. But for me, it was like hours a day. And I, you know, I don't need to do that. I need to give myself some sort of reward system that's not an app. That's just like, look, for every 10 minutes that you spend doing deep belly breathing, as my sister Maeve always recommends, or like reading a book instead of just watching Lost for the sixth time, like I get a little point. I don't know what the points do, but it's a little dopamine. Hey, I got a point. Ding. So Maybe 10 points equals 10 minutes that I can play on my stupid game. Although now I'm kind of like, I don't even want to play it. All right, listen, I'm starving. My parents are here. Kurt's got to go to a show. I probably missed him already. And there's lobster claws that aren't going to eat themselves. Yeah, that's what I have to say. I love you all. I'm so glad you're here. I'm so grateful for you. Oh, fucking Oracle card. Okay. Aw, Maeve.
You're so kind.
God. Thank you. My sister left me a really, really kind note in my Oracle deck box that really is helpful. Thank you. I love you. Oh, I'm hungry.
Okay.
Maybe I can talk my parents into taking us to brunch. Whoop, there. Somebody wants to be red.
Ho, you guys.
All right. I got Sekhmet, who is the goddess of anger and rage. She is a lion with a serpent, no, a rattlesnake on her head and an orb, and she's standing inside of a yellow sun. I mean, there's like behind her is this big yellow sun. Wow, you guys. When this fucking happens, wild. All right. Sekhmet, the goddess of anger and rage. I burn and fume and shoot daggers from my eyes. I erupt and roar, though you've not pulled my tail. My edges are sharp and I cut deep. My energy is strong and fierce, and my displeasure needs to be expressed. Though sometimes mild, I can be very intense. Once incited, I am difficult to put out. I am always appropriate, always needed. Don't try to get rid of me. I need to be acknowledged and heard. I am anger. Sekhmet, the lion-headed Egyptian sun goddess, is known as the destructive aspect of the sun. Vowing to destroy all humanity in a fit of rage, she went on a killing spree. She was stopped by the intervention of Ra, the high god, who put huge vats of beer mixed with pomegranate juice in her path. Mistaking it for human blood, Sekhmet consumed the drink and became intoxicated. When she woke up, her rage was gone. Red in this painting signifies Sekhmet's scorching, smoldering nature. Sekhmet leaps into your life to help you face your anger. Does anger, yours or someone else's, make you feel uncomfortable? Do you fear your anger because you were taught anger isn't nice? Or that expressing anger is ugly? Have you repressed or disconnected from it so much that you don't know how to express it now? Perhaps you've gone beyond anger to rage. Rage is accumulated anger gone out of control. Perhaps you're in a slow boil all the time and don't know how to take the pot from the fire. Sekhmet says our anger is part of our power as women. Don't give away your anger. Learn to express it in a way that can be heard. Learn to transform it so it empowers and energizes you. Your path to wholeness will be more vital when you make anger your ally.
Jeez, man.
Yeah. I was just saying to my dad this morning, this whole thing about my mom, like learning that my mom believed that PMS was a myth created by Big Pharma. And I said, you know, I think she would also have the same reaction to this whole perimenopause wave of, you know, attention that it's, you know, and it is, it's being monetized and used for products. But I said, you know, she was probably in perimenopause, but the chemo probably halted all of it or superseded it. But I said, you know, I think she would have been rageful. I mean, even more so, my mom was an angry woman, but I think she would have been, and she had every right to be angry. But I think between the combination of, well, I think during menopause, she would have just become, her rage would have become unmanageable. And maybe that's, you know, maybe that's why her body shut down before she got there. I don't know, but you got to learn how to have it, have the anger, express it in a way that isn't gonna hurt yourself and everybody around you, and in a way that's productive. You know, harness the rage that you want to put in a comment to call somebody out online and put it into activism. put it into doing something that will counteract what that person is talking about. Or put it into making a post that counteracts it. All right, wow. Well, I'm starving, and that was really a lot. And I'm so grateful for you all. Thank you so much. I'll see you. Oh, Strange and Unexplained is off in June, but I am playing reruns. Please, please, please do me a favor. Please. And make sure you listen. I don't care if you listen with your ears, but just make sure your phone registers that you have listened or that you're downloading the episodes as much as possible. So I don't take too much of a monetary hit this month, because I also still have to make episodes and pay my engineers. You know, my little team. And so I really need the I need the money. I'm a little terrified. All right. Thank you so much. You're amazing and I love you all. And I'll see you on the internet. Bye. Dear Daisy is a production of Grab Bag Collab and is brought to you by the generous patronage of our members. Amanda Rossman is my editor. Amanda and Amber Hunt are my partners in crime. Music was composed and performed by Kurt Bloom. If you have an idea for a limited series podcast that you'd like to talk to GrabBag about, email us at grabbagcollab@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram at GrabBagCollab. Follow me at DearDaisyPod and Daisy Egan. You can send me an anonymous email via Google Docs. The link is on our website and social media. Remember that actual letters sent through the mail take priority, so write to me old-fashioned-like at P.O. Box 10221, Cranston, Rhode Island 02910. Help us out by spreading the word about our podcasts, and remember to drink water, rest, and be kind.